welcome to a very festive episode of The Rotating Platform, a podcast about video games. You join us on the 29th of December.
Yeah. So
it's post-Christmas.
Post-Christmas, yeah. But pre-New Year.
But still feeling kind of festive, but almost festived out, really. It's been an onslaught,
well,
hasn't it?
We're in the 12 days of Christmas, right? So
yeah.
It's still technically...
What day are we on? I don't know.
Isn't it five gold rings?
Five,
it's the first day of Christmas Day. 25, 26, 27, 28, 29. Yeah, five gold rings.
So it's quite Sonic-y.
Yeah, quite Sonic-y.
It's a Sonic-themed episode.
oh, God.
Is it?
I'm prepared.
I am joined by Mark Green.
Yes, hello.
And Alan Madrell.
Hello.
And I'm Matthew Castle.
Why are you looking confused when you say that?
No, I look confused because I realise I always get Alan's surname slightly off.
Yeah, that's a slightly wrong pronunciation.
I live with it. It's my cross to bear in this life. It's Madrell, but...
Madrell. I always say Madrell.
Everybody does. I'm so... It doesn't matter. You know, whatevs, man.
So one thing I wanted to talk about just before we got started... Well, two things I want to talk about, right? One, because it's a festive episode, we're going to be giving gifts to each other.
Yay!
The gift of Christmas gifts.
Wow.
And so in between the segments of this podcast, you will hear us, we'll open some presents, essentially.
There's also going to be some exciting chat about video games.
Yeah.
What we have played.
Yeah. We're going to.
Yeah. What ones were good? Which ones were nice and which ones are naughty?
You've said that now. I don't know if we're going to do it. We've overcommitted
now. Next year's outtakes episode.
Yeah. Well, I'll leave it in.
Already banking it.
So if you've just heard that on the podcast, then you will hear the best of the year. If you didn't hear that, we're not doing it.
That's so meta.
Yeah. And we need to acknowledge that the success of the Space Arc has led to Channel 4 commissioning a television programme.
Yeah, a spin-off, which is really, really sweet of them, isn't it?
Yeah, that's very unexpected, but really great news for us.
Yeah.
They didn't really... get in touch with us about it.
No, it was,
I don't know if our lawyers are kind of briefed.
Firing
but I think
up.
They're all right.
But I presume there'd be quite a windfall for us. Like, it'd be for the rights to be using the Space Arc name.
Which is
concept.
Why this is the last platform that we're going to be on. So thanks everybody.
It's been shut down by Channel 4's lawyers.
Yeah.
Because they want to smooth the way for the hit sitcom Space Arc arriving in 2015.
Yeah.
Or should that be departing in 2015?
Yeah, well, that's what I guess they'll be asking us.
I don't know. We haven't asked us for some of our jokes.
No, it's
we've
weird.
Been doing Space Arc jokes for ages.
Yeah.
It's gold.
If you're listening, guys, we've got a whole treasure trove.
We're ready.
So that's the introduction to the podcast. let's go on a festive adventure.
Yeah, Merry Christmas, everyone.
Let's see what platform we land on. But first of all, this.
Well, this platform's like gigantic. It's massive.
Oh,
it's epic.
Yeah, and the reason is it's got all of video games of 2014 on it.
Yeah.
All of them.
All of them.
But we're going to exercise our discretion.
Yeah, we're going to kick some of them off the platform.
into the lava.
This is our... Yeah, we're just going to talk about our favourite video games of the year.
Yeah. What an original concept.
I came to be in a dream.
When I was listening to every other podcast in the world. Well, we're just going to talk about them, and they're not in any particular order. We're not doing categories or anything clever like that. It's just good stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, and we want to hear from you guys as well what your favourite games of the year were, so we'll talk more about that at the end.
Yeah.
We're going to go through our list of 10. And to keep it nice and tight, when each of us is talking about one of these games, we're going to give ourselves 2 minutes and one of the other people from our podcast will be keeping time.
Yep, you have to guess which one it is.
Yeah, it's all part of the
fun.
It's
an extra layer of fun to this already fun segment.
Yeah. Festive Christmas quiz. Who's keeping count? So, Matthew, you've got 2 minutes to talk about your first choice of game of the year. This is a list of 10 for all of us. We've obviously got individual... one person in particular is particularly fond of each game on the list. So, Matthew, what have you got for us?
Start
the clock.
First up from me is... or from us, but it's I'm wasting time. It's Bayonetta 2.
Tick tock.
I'm so stressful. I can think about it, it's the clock. Which is actually rather apt, considering Bayonetta 2. Its greatest trick is obviously Bayonetta 1's greatest trick, which is the witch time, where you dodge things and you slow down. But what I really love about Bayonetta 2, and I think what it does to the idea that kind of takes it to the next level, is... It's a game of just pure visual splendour where it throws so much going on, and actually it's designed that when you go into Witch Time, like only by entering that slow motion do you kind of reveal like how amazing the actual visuals are and what's actually happening. Yeah. So for example, you fight this giant boss in a big tank of water, and when it slashes at you, you know, when you see it in normal time, it's just passing through the water. You slow time down and you realise it's actually parting the water in like a split second, and there's all this amazing stuff going on. So it's a game that you're just designed to replay and replay. I mean, one because of its combat systems.
You haven't convinced us yet.
One because of its combat systems. It's got great combat systems, but also because it's... So you're replaying it for that, but you also are playing it to discover this layer of kind of beauty that kind of lies beyond it. It's packed full of ideas. I mean, it's just one of the best looking games of the year in the Wii U. You know, it's just pumping out some amazing looking stuff. It's got loads of fun Nintendo references in. God, this is really stressful constraints to put on this. But it's definitely something everyone should try, particularly if you haven't played either, because then you can get Bayonetta 1 on Wii U as well. Double whammy.
Yeah. Very good. With 7 seconds to spare.
It's really stressful. It's not too stressful, but with you guys going 15 seconds, because you're picking really weird intervals. Like, who says 50 seconds?
I did look at Alan at 1 minute, and I think you chose not to interrupt.
Yeah, because there was a lovely thing going on, and I thought,
I like it. I like this concept. Seconds, we should use this for all the sections of the podcast.
No, we shouldn't. It's making me feel really stressed. I don't like it at all, because I don't have my thoughts take longer to form.
No, I think it was good. I was convinced about Bayonetta from just those 2 minutes, and I'm glad it didn't.
It's a whole, like, it's a mini space arc, isn't it?
I'll do another game from 2014. Have you got the timer ready?
Already.
Right.
Ready, go!
Right, I'm going to talk about Thief. So this is quite a controversial choice, because generally the consensus on the new Thief seems to be that it's rubbish, and I think that consensus comes from a lot of people who haven't played it, frankly. Keeps coming up on Steam sales, and I strongly recommend anyone to buy it, because it is far, far better than is generally considered. So it's an update of the PC games from the, 90s, mid-90s. And you play a thief, and the game's and it's a stealth game. So it's partly made by the guys who did the new Deus Ex, I believe. So I was really looking forward to it on that basis, and I just think the atmosphere is really great. It's incredibly dark. It's almost too hard to see sometimes, but it's got a really good kind of creepy...
Why do people think he's rubbish, and then why are they wrong?
I don't know. Just something about the stealth. I think people think that the systems are a bit ropey, but it's probably not as varied and interesting as the original Thief games. It's a bit, if you don't like, I hated the new Hitman for kind of like ruining some of what made the old Hitman's great. I guess if you play
50 seconds.
Really? I haven't even started describing it. I've panicked. It's just a really good evocation of being a thief. You know, you see his fingers kind of running over paintings and stuff, and you really feel like you're tiptoeing into these basements with all these kind of treasures and stealing stuff.
25 seconds.
Very good, sort of dark, sort of London, Victorian London, sort of foggy Jack the Ripper stuff. I don't know what I'm talking about. I'm panicking.
There's tofu.
It's basically really good. I think the atmosphere is great, it's just if you like stealth games,
you'll love this. And stop on that bombshell.
I don't like this. This pressure is awful. It turns you into a kind of babbling.
Does this
cliche? If you like stealth games, you'll like this.
I can't believe
that's amazing.
At least you can say I really like the guy with the giant eye in his shoulder.
Right, so that's Thief. Good. Oh, I can't believe I ended
it. My turn to run the gauntlet.
So do you want me to do the timing?
Yeah, go on then.
Yeah, right. The time starts now.
I want to talk about Monument Valley for mobile devices, because I'm the resident mobile device hipster. Mm-hmm. So on iOS and Android. So I played on Android.
You're getting everyone's pure thoughts, like unfiltered, with this 2 minutes thing. It's
just stream of consciousness. So it is a simple puzzle game in the sense that you're trying to get from A to B. You're a little character who it's a story told without any words, and you are trying to get towards
The end of the thing.
1:30.
Where, oh man, I haven't even said anything. So, right, what's great about it? It's set essentially in an M.C. Escher painting, yeah. Right? And you have to, there's no possible way that the physics of it will work where you're trying to get to. So you have to like rotate things around and then suddenly it makes sense and through you can walk.
Mm.
It's a beautiful game. No, very few words in the story, but it's more sort of evocative, these simple shapes representing stuff like crows and you're a little princess character. It's won all the sort of awards and stuff. And yeah. It's a game that anybody could pick up and play and get a kick out of it. It's just lovely. It goes for that indie thing of being rather touching.
So your mobile game, lovely. Yeah, I think you can fit into 2 minutes quite easily.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, it works in chunks very nicely as well, so it's good for the tube. And there's nothing time-pressured about it, so, you know, it's not a reaction-type game at all.
You want me to stop the clock?
Yeah, no, I'm done. I'm
30 good. Seconds left.
You see?
Wow.
Can you bank that towards a later entry? We're going to add a new rule.
Yeah, you get a prize at the end
of
you.
That's Monument Valley, isn't it? Oh, there's DLC, but I haven't played it.
No. Oh, yeah, quite controversial DLC with all the... all that, you see, all that are people really moaning about the
price. They charged extra money, and loads of people went on and gave the original game like one star out of spite.
Well done, internet, because the game is so
trying to trick you into overrunning.
You don't need the DLC, it's great.
3, 2, 1, finish.
Yeah.
Good job. Time is up. Right, who's next?
I am.
It's Matthew Castle, and he's ready to talk about games. Go!
So I'm going to talk about Mario Kart 8,
yes.
A highly original pick. In the last days of official Nintendo magazine, Mario Kart 8 brought us a lone bit of happiness gathered around the TV. For my money, Mario Kart Wii slightly bodged the local multiplayer. Like, I didn't really like the local multiplayer in that game because it was designed for 12 people. I thought the game was too bloated. But for some reason, I think they've maybe made the tracks slightly narrower in Mario Kart 8, but it just feels like a much tighter game, and we played it locally. Mm. And its big gimmick is that it adds zero gravity, which basically means you drive on the walls and stuff. It's not really a thing, it's more of a cosmetic choice.
Well, you don't really notice it.
Yeah, exactly, because the camera follows you, so it doesn't feel like you're racing upside down.
Yeah.
But for some reason, what it has triggered is this sort of amazing rush of like imaginative track design. I think the actual tracks visually... conceptually are some of the most interesting ones they've done in quite some time. You know, you end up like sort of tearing up waterfalls and bouncing between clouds, and it's almost like they've looked at Mario Galaxy
50 seconds
and it's kind of like incredible kind of scope of madness and gone, oh, let's have a bit of that, you know, and they've really, really pushed it all out. It's a great looking game. It's got this brilliant sense of humour in that you can watch everything and replay and slow it down. There's always, you know, it really kind of brings out all the mad little character animations, which have always been there, you know, characters looking at each other going past. But it's just really, really well observed. It's got great online multiplayer. Anyone can pick it up and play. And I think it's probably on Wii U the first kind of like most complete version of a repeating kind of, you know, series that they've done. It's like absolutely, you know, the best version of that thing.
And it gave us a meme.
It gave us Luigi Dexter.
Yeah. So for that, on that basis.
Yeah. So God bless you, Nintendo. Seconds. Awesome music as well. So shout out for that.
Just put that in.
Look at that. 3, 2, 1. Go, magic.
What is this 50 seconds thing you've got going
on? Yeah, this is my thing. I thought I'd run with it.
It really throws you because you're like, oh, a minute, I know what I'm doing. Yeah, 50 seconds? No. Then you start thinking about the concept of 50 seconds and it all begins to unravel.
Why did he do a minute?
Right, Matthew, you better do another one, I reckon.
Okay, Matthew Castle, on the subject of a game.
Which game? Evil Within.
Oh, yeah.
You've given him an advantage there.
I don't have to say Evil Within.
He's going
to
say save 2 seconds on that.
Yeah. Take a couple of seconds off.
Okay, Evil Within. Go.
Hello. Let's talk about the Evil Within.
Hello.
He wasted it.
No, I can't believe I blew it. I blew my lead. So after Mario Kart 8, Evil Within is kind of like the exact opposite. Not in terms of like it's a survival horror and it's not a karting game, but where Mario Kart 8 is this sort of perfectly formed, you know, everything's as polished as it should be. The Evil Within's quite rough around the edges. It's got a lot of problems. You know, it's got weird difficulty spikes. It's a bit shonky visually. You have to download like an absolutely massive patch if you play it on the next gen consoles to make it like even functioning, which is a big problem. But at the part of it, you have, and we've talked about this a bit before on the podcast, but you have kind of Shinji Mikami's next game, and more importantly, it's Shinji Mikami returning to the kind of Resident Evil 4 style of game. Mm-hmm. It's Resident Evil 4 shot through with like a real nasty sort of strand of kind of menace and sort of grotesque sort of body horror stuff, which right. wasn't in Resi 4, so it's lost some of the kind of campiness, some of the cheesiness of that
yeah,
game.
Yeah, more of the sort of getting hung on meat hooks.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So it's a bit more grit, it's a bit more kind of
50
Saw.
Seconds.
It's a bit more like Saw. But, you know, you sort of get past that and you get past the kind of unpleasantness. Mm. You have, you know, no one makes games that feel like Shinji Mikami games. You know, he just knows how to do that over-the-shoulder shooting, you know, where, you know, in a world where every bullet counts, mm. you know, every bullet feels like it counts. You know, they have, like, incredible impact and in terms of the way enemies fall and headshots. And it's got this thing where you can set people on fire and that adds a whole new level of strategy into it. And it's brilliantly paced in terms of constantly trading up new ideas.
20 seconds.
You know, a lot of people kind of, I think, fell out with it because it's just so unpleasant and it's so kind of hard going. But I really got into it. I think it's a real huge sort of adventure that kind of pulls you along. Mm. I've got a lot of time for it and I think it's
You've got 5 seconds.
Diamond in the rough. So no check it out. Check it out.
Brilliant.
Check it out. Check it out.
So it's like opening a trapdoor at the end. You check it out.
Check it out.
Good. Yeah, I've got Evil Within on
Steam. Imagine if you had to write reviews in 2 minutes. They'd all end with things like, if you like stealth games, you'll like this. And check it out. Check it out.
This is awful. It's exposing our true thoughts.
The tricks of the trade.
It's not good.
Check it out.
Right, okay.
Well, it's so poetic. Well, that's the reviews police coming to arrest us.
Going to get us. All right, I'll do one, shall I?
Do one.
Yeah.
Go.
Well, oh, wait, no, I'm not ready.
What? Yeah, no, it's going. Oh. Look, time.
Okay, I'm going to talk about Shadow of Mordor.
50 seconds.
Oh, great. I've talked about Shadow of Mordor a lot on this podcast, so I haven't actually got... I don't want to talk about it at length.
All right, so should we just have a little pause?
No, don't use up my time. I am actually going to talk about it. So Shadow of Mordor is just... I think it started... I mean, is it right that it started life as a Batman game and it got kind of... It seems to be a rumour about it.
It maybe has Assassin's Creed... assets behind it.
Okay, so it's very much you know, Batman style fighting, Assassin's Creed style parkour, if people still call it that, and and it's just really solidly put together. I really get a sense of Shadow of Mordor. It's one of those games that where developer is confident enough that they get out of your way, essentially. They kind of set up the world and they've set up all the systems, and they just let you do what you want to do without really annoying mechanics or, you know, unskippable cutscenes or whatever, just getting in your way. And for my money, you know, obviously Watch Dogs came out this year, GTA obviously got redone this year. I think Shadow of Mordor is one of the most alive
50
worlds.
50 seconds.
Oh, one of the most alive worlds that I've experienced this year. Something about the voice acting on the orcs and the variety of it, the strength of it, the amount of stuff that's happening around the world, and the amount of different ways you can fight everyone and all the different abilities you unlock. I just really felt I was in a world that was alive in a way that I didn't get from a lot of other open world games. And yeah, the orcs were funny. They had funny Cockney accents, and
it's
I like
proper
the
next
music,
gen game, isn't it? It's one of, yes, it actually really is worth playing next gen.
Hail we talked about,
and the Nemesis system.
The Nemesis system, absolutely
next gen Hail,
absolutely key.
At
13
seconds, he mentions the Nemesis.
Yes,
system.
I did plan to bring it in right at the end to tail to do the tail
two,
in, the tail off
one.
Oh. Not a great.
I love the exact so the Nemesis system, which is the tail. I'm doing the tail off the tail. Oh man, that's gold.
Did I make a good case for it? Better than Resi 2. We put it that way.
I'm pretty sure that's what Edge wrote in their Game of the Year writers as well. The tail. I've got the tail.
Oh.
Brilliant.
Who came up with this 2 minute idea?
That was so rich.
Needlessly stressful.
It's such a rich analysis.
Let's see if I can do better then.
Oh yeah, crikey. Okay.
Ready?
Yeah, go.
Alan's next game of Our next game of 2014, go, 2 minutes.
Far Cry 4, which is the sequel to Far Cry 3.
Correct. That's 2 seconds wasted.
Shoot. This is a waste of time. Okay, so it's similar in a lot of ways to Far Cry 3, but
1 minute 50 seconds.
What I enjoyed very much about it is just the sheer silliness of it, and the tone is set just right in terms of the interactions with the animals, like, because there is a sort of serious plot line going on, but you can, it's another world which is very alive.
Oh, that's true.
It doesn't feel scripted. The interactions with even the guards and stuff, like, even that doesn't feel scripted at all. It's just a huge, great playground. Mm. It's a very, very beautiful playground. Great protagonist in Thingy, Pagan Min. AJ, not antagonist. As interesting. Antagonist, yeah. Protagonist, not as interesting, but still, like, quite a good thing, isn't it?
You are tying yourself in all kinds of knots now. Come on.
But, okay, all right. I love the way you could just, there's got to be something very special. I've been flying in this little helicopter thing and using grenade launcher down on an outpost. That's got to be right up there. And riding an elephant. That's got to be right up there with your top gaming moments.
Yep.
Of 2014, am I right?
50 seconds.
Nice, it's good.
Yeah. You've got plenty of
else? Yeah, what else can we say about Far Cry 4? Looks good. I don't know. What?
How do you think the Himalayas kind of compare to Rook Island?
I liked the Himalayas and I liked the whole Tibet-Nepal thing going on. Very pretty prayer flags and little craggy bits to discover and things like that.
It's a beautiful... It's really lovely.
I want to see new and different and exciting, interesting things from that franchise in future.
I got spoiled on the secret ending. Have you discovered that?
Oh yeah.
That's kind of cool.
Yeah, the secret ending is lovely.
Don't want to spoil
it. But it's sort of hinted at really nicely, isn't it? When you complete the game, it's like hinted that there is another way of doing it. Which
you pointed out to me. 1, done.
Good
job.
Yay! We win.
Oh, round of applause, eh?
Really? I don't think so, but okay.
Right, so Matthew, you're up next.
Go. So I'm going to talk about Metal Gear Solid Ground Zeroes, the infamous demo masquerading as game.
Right,
controversial. I imagine people who haven't played it would probably label it.
Yeah.
Which, of course, it's kind of like a, I don't want to say like a prototype, but it was kind of a taster of Phantom Pain, which comes out in later this year, 2015.
Yeah.
And in which I think Kojima just wanted to sort of introduce some of his systems, sort of show you what the Fox engine was kind of capable of doing and the kind of direction that he was going to take Metal Gear Solid in, which is sandbox stealth, which kind of, like, some people would argue, you know, it's been done before, you know, like some Hitman was quite big levels, you know, had sort of some stealth elements to it. You know, it's you know, Metal Gear has traditionally been quite scripted, quite linear, quite contained. But what was really interesting about this is it's kind of a world where it feels less video gamey in that you can't just rely on like an area loading out of existence. You know, you can't just go, I've really messed up here, but as long as I can run to the exit, I can get into the next place. You know, kind of a mistake made on one side of the map will kind of haunt you all the way to the other side of the map. You know, people can stumble on guards that you killed, you know, 10 minutes ago, and it can become like an issue. So it feels like quite an organic stealth game.
Yeah.
And what this was designed to do, it had a central mission which you can complete in about like 5 minutes. People have speedrun it, and you can take it like 2 hours as well if you take your time. But it has other missions that are basically designed to show off like what that engine's capable of and how other styles of games can exist in it. So it's quite an action-y level, and Metal Gear's always been bad at action. I think, you know, when it gets to actual like gun, shoot, you know, it can
it's
be...
It's not been a 40. Yeah.
Yeah.
15 seconds.
It can be a bit weak, but this actually shows that gunplay can work alongside sneaking. It looks gorgeous. It gives you a great little taste of a story to come.
Yeah.
Gets sort of hooks into you. I can't wait to play Phantom Pain.
Very nice. That was very calm. Very, very, very calm.
It's
and collected.
Really, you have to be calm when you talk about stealth. So I was like Solid Snake.
You got this down
in the grass.
You've got a feeling for what 2 minutes feels like.
Yeah.
Right, now it's your turn to see what 2 minutes feels like. Al.
Right, okay.
You are going to
be
talking about a game starting now.
Of Gang Beasts, which is it kind of came out in full this year, been in development for a while.
Yes.
Lovely game. It's at its best when you're in a room with a few friends. It's a local co-op thing, and you play these little sort of jelly baby type characters, except now they're animals in the full game.
Yeah, well, they're animal costumes.
Animal costumes, aren't they? So they're these little characters, and essentially all you need to do is run into your comrades and beat them up. But yeah, the way the mechanic works is you can punch or you can grab hold of people with your your left or right limbs, and you can run around and you can jump. And the idea is just to do them in by throwing them into a pit or pushing them off the edge of something or something like that.
We played it for hours.
We played it. We got together and thought, we'll just play a little game. It's 5 minutes just to show what it is. And it just dominated the day. It's so much fun. My top Gang Beasts memory is playing on the Ferris wheel, whatever the English word for that is, Ferris wheel level.
It's Ferris wheel. 1 minute.
level. And I was in a toe-to-toe scrapping match with someone. And it was going badly. And I thought, I know what I'll do. I will get my right hand and grab onto a Ferris wheel carriage that's passing. Because I thought, if this works and I can escape that way, it will be the greatest thing I've ever done. And I did it. And I was whisked away into the sky on this little Ferris wheel carriage. But then, of course, I'm halfway up the thing and I need to get off.
30 seconds.
And I need to drop off. So it was just one of the greatest things I've ever done in this life, was escaping on the Ferris wheel in Gang Beasts. But then later, on that same level, we were playing a game where we could run as fast as we can along the pier before.
Yeah, we were making our own little games up. Yeah,
which is a great.
It's a great sign of a good multiplayer.
8, 7.
So check it out for sure. Even the early version.
Check it out again. 3.
Two. If you like games with little fighting jelly babies, you'll like this.
Check it out.
We're just unraveling. This is just tearing us apart.
Check it out. I'll tell you what, if that ends up on the box for that game.
Right, our last pick of 2014.
Yeah.
Matthew, 2 minutes starting now.
I am doing Professor Layton versus Phoenix Wright, Ace Attorney. Mm-hmm. Quite a niche game. Anyone who knows me will know that I'm absolutely obsessed with Ace Attorney, so it was going to feature on my Game of the Year list in some way. It's a mashup between Phoenix Wright and Professor Layton, Level 5's game, kind of Capcom Level 5 got together. It's a really interesting thing in that the game is kind of half Ace Attorney, in that you're doing the trials and all that malarkey. Yeah. And then the other half is sort of the Professor Layton mold, where you sort of walk around a town solving logic 26. Puzzles. But what's weird...
I miss completely.
Well, what I really like about it, and I think what really got my attention, was that it's written by a guy named Shu Takumi, who is the creator of Ace Attorney. Hmm. And so it's seeing him write a Ace Attorney again, which is a good thing, because he hasn't worked on them since Apollo Justice. But it's also interesting seeing Professor Layton kind of as written by him, because he's got a bit more of a sense of humour, a bit more kind of a dark edge that Level 5 doesn't have. Yeah. So you kind of get Professor Layton kind of with a bit of a sort of sense of humour, which he normally doesn't have. Yeah. And that was really interesting. And it's a total fan service, but it's brilliant. It's a brilliant hybrid of the two, right down to like the music, which kind of takes classic Ace Attorney themes, but then we'll play them on like the sort of accordions and fiddles that you use for Professor Layton's music. So it really kind of merges together. And if you like both those series, which I do, it's absolute gold. And I also think the actual trials stuff they do, and it's really interesting, because the whole thing's based around witch trials and like mob mentality. Oh, right. So instead of like tackling one testimony at a time, Phoenix Wright has to deal with kind of like a big angry mob of five people and like play them all against one another. Ooh. Which is actually kind of pushes it further than the Ace Attorney games have in terms of their own things. So I think it's a really interesting game. I think mechanically, it goes about as far as it can with those things. I absolutely love it. 3, you should play it.
2. Check it.
Yeah, 1. Check it out.
Very coherent and intelligent description of that in 2 minutes. Well done.
Thanks.
That's it. That's our game.
That was really stressful. That turned what should have been a celebration into like just absolute torture.
So that's our quick fire.
So stressful. Any of these are worth your pennies if you haven't already.
And you're probably thinking like, what happened to that really good game they haven't mentioned, or that other really good game
The answer is we hate it.
Yeah,
we hate and you.
Yeah, so don't write in. We're not interested. No, but what we mean is, tell us what your favourite games of 2014 are. We would actually be very interested. Too.
Yeah, because 10 is too short. So,
We've missed off had to miss off some great games by limiting ourselves by number and time. So tell us what your favourites were. The details are in the podcast, but I'll just rattle them off here as well. At Rotating Podcast on Twitter. Facebook is facebook.com/rotating platform. You can email us at trp@therotatingplatform.com or visit our website at therotatingplatform.com. So we really look forward to hearing your games of 2014. And we should get onto another festive platform, another tinsel filled platform after this.
This platform is a very generous platform. Well, I'm saying that. I don't know. It might not be.
It might be disappointing.
It might be a platform of disappointment. Basically, this is our first present unwrapping platform.
Yeah.
This is where we've decided to get each other some gifts.
Gaming-related
gifts.
And I think first up, Alan.
I've got gifts. They're big.
So who's first? Give Matthew his present first, maybe.
Okay. Merry Christmas.
Oh, thanks, Alan. It's good paper.
The wrapping is a bit... It's okay, I'd say.
My wrapping is shoddy at best.
Yeah, there's some strange corners.
The corners confuse us all.
Oh, yeah, this particular thing is a nightmare to wrap. It's normally shaped, except for a protuberance.
What is this?
What is that?
Oh.
My thinking is, I know you're a massive mobile gamer, so...
What the heck is that?
This is a... Oh, it's a light gun game, an augmented reality gun.
That looks amazing.
That you stick. That's actually really good. Oh, it's... no, I'm thinking of my awful present.
Yeah, I didn't know we get each other nice presents.
Nah. Download it. Oh, so it works with a game called...
What's it called?
Aliens.
It's called Aliens. So AR is in green and Aliens is in blue.
Aliens?
So you stick it on this gun...
Yeah,
you connect your smartphone to the gun.
I think it clips on or something.
Oh, great!
And then I think you use the camera of the phone, and it will project.
Oh, what
stuff onto what the camera sees?
Wow. That's actually really good stuff.
That's actually.
I thought it was quite a nice idea.
Oh, like this. God. It says 10 levels of epic storyline gameplay.
This
plus
is what I'm looking for.
Final AR confrontation.
Oh my god.
You've got to finish this.
I hope it doesn't lead to Matthew getting sucked into an alternate reality in the movies.
Yeah, this is it.
Where's my present then?
Okay, forget about this bit that's torn.
This is
at the top.
Very poorly wrapped, I'd say.
Yeah, it just got worse when I picked it up.
Why didn't I get
the
reindeer paper as well?
Look, this is gold. That's good quality gold paper.
Oh, it looks good.
Yeah.
What's this? This looks amazing.
It's a nice thing.
This is so bad.
No, but it's all good though.
Oh, it's a Pac-Man lamp. That's amazing.
Yeah.
16 different colours.
Life size.
It's massive as well.
It is probably big.
Well, how big would you say that is?
Do you really put thought into this?
I won't open it up. It's got a remote
Not
control
much.
And everything. That's incredible.
Oh,
I'm feeling really guilty now. It's like a proper present.
Alan.
Great.
Be somewhat
Merry
terrifying.
Christmas, everyone. Thanks, Alan.
Thanks, Alan.
Nice. Thank you.
Game Merry Christmas. Things.
Yeah, great stuff. All right. Should we beat a hasty retreat from this platform, Matthew, while we try and work out what we're going to do next?
Is there another platform which takes us via WH Smith's or Argos?
Or like a 24-hour garage, probably.
Yeah.
John Lewis? No.
Going to get yourself a multi-bag of crisps.
Desperately looks around for room for things he can wrap up. It's a packet of Tums. You shouldn't have.
Oh, we're in real trouble. Anyway, get us off this platform, Matthew. Quick.
All right, well, let's skedaddle. But first of all, this.
True Facts platform is back for Christmas.
Hooray!
Post-Christmas, pre-New Year's. We got some True Facts. And our True Facts, are 100% True Facts.
Yeah.
Absolutely not made up in any shape or form. Are this time around Christmas. Oddly enough. So I found these, some of my True Facts, at the bottom of my stocking.
Oh!
This year.
Yeah. Christmas pud.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah.
Instead of a coin.
I had it where I left out a mince pie for Father Christmas, and he left me a note of cool things to check out.
Right. And no presents.
No presents.
Oh, that's nice. Oh. You were on the naughty list.
Yeah. It's a present for the listeners.
All right, who wants to start, kick us off with a true fact about Christmas?
Matthew.
Oh, we'll start us off. You know how some games, they have like a little bonus thing if you play them on Christmas Day?
Yeah.
I've found some of these.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
cool.
So
ooh,
these are pretty cool.
Yeah.
So if you play The Last of Us on Christmas Day, Joel, instead of taking Ellie across the country, he's tasked with delivering a giant present to the Fireflies. But in a devastating twist, having trekked the length of America to get there, he discovers it was just a measly Terry's chocolate orange. So, you know, think how cross he must be.
Oh, so we don't get a chance to play that now, after, now that Christmas is gone.
You have to play the whole game on Christmas Day. So it's like 18 hours, so I spent a long time doing it.
Classic Christmas.
Yeah.
Oh. Great, good fact.
Good.
Alan, have you got a fact?
Yeah, I've got a Splinter Cell fact. Right. If you play Splinter Cell on Christmas Day, instead of the famous sort of neck-breaky type action, Sam will, in fact, creep up behind guards, tap him on the shoulder, and give him a nice present.
Oh, isn't it? That's what I like to hear.
That's exactly what I want from Splinter
Cell.
It's
very festive.
So, you probably saw this, my true fact, you probably saw this on the internet, that Nintendo introduced a new Pokemon for Christmas.
Oh, yeah?
Oh, yes.
Called Birda Roast. it's basically a cooked turkey, and its primary attack is shooting stuffing out of its neck.
You've cleaned that one up, haven't you?
Yeah, a little bit.
It's disturbing.
Yeah, it's very disturbing. Classic Nintendo.
another Christmas Day thing I discovered. If you play Alien Isolation on Christmas Day,
right.
You have a better idea of where the alien is because he quietly sings Christmas Rapping by the Waitresses under his breath.
Best Christmas song.
He's creeping around. It's really, really unnerving.
Oh, Christmas brings out the best moments in games.
It's great. Some people think it's jarring, but I like it.
It brings out the best moments in Mass Effect. Right. We're playing it at Christmas. There's a special mode that unlocks only on Christmas Day.
They're still updating Mass Effect.
Yeah, only the original, mind. Right. If you play Mass Effect on Christmas Day, you will find that it simulates a really awkward office Christmas party. Like, all the conversational options are really hackneyed until, you know, Commander Shepard gets a bit frisky and ends up with the entire crew in the space stationery cupboard.
I've got to celebrate Christmas, GTA 5 had a new festive weapon as DLC, which is just a sock full of clementines. and then apparently it's as deadly as it is delicious.
Is that just...
That was my opinion of it. I wrote it down because that's what I thought having played it.
That wasn't an in-game...
It's funny you should mention that, actually, because you mentioned The Last of Us earlier. If you play The Walking Dead Season 1 and Season 2 on Christmas, the character of Clementine is replaced by an actual Clementine.
Right. It just turns every decision into eat the clementine, don't eat the clementine. Every step of the way, he has that extra call to make. He's like, oh man, it is my ward.
That's really harrowing, extra harrowing. The Walking Dead. Oh man, that would be tough.
At least it's safe from the zombies.
Oh, good, good.
Oh my.
Oh, some great Christmas facts there. Well researched, everyone. I think I didn't see many of those mentioned on the in the mainstream gaming press.
No,
so we've done some good.
They don't really care about.
They just give up at Christmas.
I know. Exactly.
Yeah, you know, and we're here diligently playing those Christmas games, digging out that Christmas DLC. So yeah, great stuff. All right, let's get on our sleigh and ride on out of this off this platform and onto the next platform after this.
We've landed on the next platform.
Yeah.
And this platform is deeply nostalgic. It also seems to be powered by other people's words, which is a nice break for us because we're all talked out.
Yeah.
This is a platform where we hear some of our listeners' cherished Christmas yarns.
That's right.
We ask them to submit them, and I think we've had a batch.
We've had a lot. I think Christmas is a very special time for gaming memories, isn't it?
Oh, sure.
So, we've had a good, quite a few people on Twitter talking about what their favourite memories are. Shall I read a couple out?
Yeah.
So, Big Fly Walking.
Was that the anecdote or the person? Was it a Christmas highlight that they saw a big fly walking?
That's a memory you wouldn't forget. They're saying Scramble by Grandstand, if that counts. Really love that little tabletop game. Yeah, do you remember these Grandstand tabletop games? They were a very good Argos catalogue Christmas gift in the 80s. They're like little, little made of plastic. You stood them on your table. They were like, they looked like a sort of, if you imagine an arcade machine with the bottom taken off, so it's just the top with the screen, and it just tiny. This.
And it would sometimes have a little like joystick type control on.
So Scramble was one of the popular ones, and the image, and it was black screen and all LED.
It was one that was like a motorbike race.
Yeah, it's sort of coloured LED. So kind of like Game & Watch. Nintendo did some of these kind of like games.
Cabinet version of Game & Watch, I suppose.
So I had the old LCD, like, you know, toy of the
but
films,
but that's like a grey screen.
Chunky, the Tiger ones.
Right, similar. And those Tomytronic ones that you put up against your... Those binocular ones you put against your head. Similar sort of thing. Oh, yeah. I never got one of those for Christmas. I would have loved to get one of them for the old Christmas. Mm. Richard Burrows says, me and my cousin playing Double Dash when I first got my GameCube.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that's good times right there.
I kind of secretly think Double Dash is the best Mario Kart. Look at Matthew's face.
I absolutely... The balloon battle was my multiplayer game of choice at university, but...
In Double Dash?
Double Dash, yeah. Yeah, really good balloon battles. Yeah. I was never completely sold on the dual kart thing.
I played a lot of it. And I've said to you guys before, at Nintendo.
You were the best at it, yeah.
Just in case anyone. I didn't get an award like some people get for their achievements up on the mantelpiece there, but yeah, certainly I am the champion. Merlin by Parker Brothers. Anyone else remember? Oh, sorry, this is Hey Little Bee. That's a cute. Oh, and it's it's a little bee from. Is that Hudson? Hudson Soft?
Oh, yeah.
Hudson Soft's little bee logo.
Oh, yeah.
That's their Twitter image. Merlin by Parker Brothers. Anyone else remember that little red brick full of fun? Nope. Sorry, Hey Little Bee.
Great anecdote, though.
Sounds like an LCD game, then, I guess. Like Parker Brothers. Or maybe it was a VCS.
Merlin.
Because they released Little Red Brick. Nope. Send us a picture.
Further Hey information.
Give us some more info. Jamie Firth. Mr. J. Firth. My Commodore 64 was confiscated in August due to bad behaviour. On Christmas Day, it was returned to me with Batman and World Games. Ace, in capital letters. And he notes, this was like 1989, not as it read this year.
That Batman game was great, wasn't it?
I don't think it was that great, but at the time, we thought it was great.
Well, yeah, I remember it very fondly. Mm.
But that's great. That's like, I had... There was one Christmas. Do you remember Special Reserve? There was this company called Special Reserve that advertised a lot in video game magazines, and it was a mail order subscription. Mm. So you could, and if you, when you signed up, it was like those Book of the Month clubs that you got 5 games for 1p.
Oh yeah, but then it was like
suckered for like a game a month. Right. But I signed up for that, and I don't know if my parents did it on purpose or whether it just happened, but all the games turned up on Christmas Eve. So no, it was like best Christmas ever because I had 5 Amiga, brand new Amiga games.
Oh, man.
So there's nothing better than the sort of unexpected arrival of games for Christmas. Who else we got? Andrew Rice says, Twilight Princess was a very special Christmas for me. After a month of Wii Sports and Play, Wii Play, right? It blew my mind. It's a different game he's talking about.
I was going to say, Twilight Princess, I think, is a very Christmassy feeling game. It's quite autumnal. Yes. Let's go back. Cause I remember, because I just started working on Endgamer. That was the year Wii came out.
Oh, yes. Yeah, yeah.
And I don't know if you remember, Kim, our dep art head, went on holiday, and I looked after her flat for a week. Do you remember I was living in a B&B for ages?
Not specifically.
No, did you not care about the welfare of your staff back then?
Well, I was. All I cared that you were generating words.
But basically, Kim let me... sort of look after a flat for a week because I was living in B&Bs at the time.
Oh no, I do remember this. Yeah, yeah.
And I played it in her flat, and it was very, very cold. And her rats were scrabbling around. She had pet rats, remember?
Oh my lord! Yeah, right, not in the
walls. No, they were scrabbling around. I connected with these rats, but I played Twilight Princess like intensively for a week.
Yeah.
In this flat, and it was a very festive special. I kind of mixed in. I almost don't want to play it again now because I can't.
I know it sounds ridiculous, but I have the same thing with Metropolis Street Racer on Dreamcast. So that's the game that Project Gotham became. Same developers. And for some reason, I got that at Christmas. I think my girlfriend might have bought it me for Christmas. And I just sat in my flat on my own playing it. And because the game had a real-time clock. So if you were playing a San Francisco track, you were playing it at the whatever the time in the conditions, the daytime conditions of whatever San Francisco was at that time. And weirdly, even though it's not a Christmassy game, I will always associate that game with Christmas. And I don't really want to play it again, because I don't think I'll get the same feeling from
it.
That was a really good Christmas, Metropolis Street Racer Christmas. Craig McAdam says, Ocarina of Time on N64 doesn't get much better. Well, that's true. So Ocarina of Time, I just started on in video game magazines. So that was that came out when I started on arcade. And yeah, that was a big Christmas.
Was that 97, 98?
98, what? I think.
When did that come out? Was it just before it was a holiday?
Yeah, it got delayed. It was supposed to come out, I think it came out literally the week before Christmas in the end.
Right.
It got super, super late, but we were obviously playing it in the office. We got an early copy, so we were playing in the office a few weeks, maybe a couple of months before.
That's a good Christmas.
That's
right
a magical Christmas,
I didn't play it till later, but...
That's it, because I remember that year, my brother got it on... He got that for Christmas, and I got Pilot... I wanted Pilot Wings.
Oh, yeah.
And because I was really stubborn, we only had the one in 64, obviously.
Yeah.
In my head, I kind of convinced myself that Ocarina was like garbage because it was it meant like not playing my game that I got for Christmas.
Wow.
So I was actually quite anti-Ocarina to begin with until you know, I obviously realised
it's quite good.
Yeah, it's all right, isn't it?
Chris Little says as well, he Ocarina of Time and Half-Life in my stocking. What a time to be 15. Half-Life as well. Wow. That's double. Was that the same year?
But Half-Life came out much earlier.
That's
in
like
year.
90. Yeah, yeah. It wasn't a Christmas release, but yeah. Wow, that's a lucky 15-year-old.
That's what the worst thing is though. It's getting a game you really want for Christmas on PC and then it not working. Because back in the day when it wasn't as slick as Steam and whatnot. Because I can remember getting Discworld 2 on the PC.
Right.
So I was really into point and click adventures and Discworld, and we couldn't get it to play with the sound. It was always freaking sound card problems.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I remember going, you know, we didn't really, you know, we had the internet, but not to the point where we were kind of au fait with going online and searching for solutions to things. So I remember we'd have to, like, try and convince people who knew about computers to come around on Boxing Day. But having a game that you can't play on Christmas,
that's pure
agony.
Well, that's why everyone's so angry about the attacks on Xbox and PlayStation, right? At networks at Christmas, because it's just,
That's the dumb thing. I know it's gone from, but it, like... That was always the beauty of consoles. It was for people who didn't want to have to make games work.
Yeah.
Now, they don't work again. Yeah. What?
Yeah.
It's madness.
Yeah.
But Xbox One is a really great console. I will just put that out there. In fact, I can list you 50 reasons Xbox One is going to rule 2015 in the latest issue of OXM on sale now.
It's just so sad that the platform has started to rotate and now we have to jump off onto
the
next one. Although having said that, we haven't talked about our own Christmas gaming memories.
Yeah.
Did you have
More of a sort of series of things that happened? It was a great few years when there was a really good Tomb Raider game coming out just before every Christmas, and I made a thing of it. Every Christmas, I would play Tomb Raider until they got rubbish, and then I stopped.
And you stopped.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
That was top.
So Tomb Raider feels Christmassy to you?
Yeah, it does actually. The first. Three or four Tomb Raider games are very Christmassy to me.
That's cool.
Yeah, good times.
Bro, I got a PS3. The last time I got a console for Christmas, I got a PS3 with Uncharted 2, which was a brilliant Christmas. Because that was the first game worth getting a PS3 for, This Christmas, I got a all singing, all dancing gaming PC.
Oh yeah!
So that's very exciting.
It's very exciting to see you join the PC.
So now I can finally play PC games.
Great! Yeah, you can help me make it my way through the 500 Steam games that I've got that I haven't played. We can kind of share the burden of getting through them all.
So thanks for your Christmas memories.
Yeah, thanks
everyone. Enjoyed them.
That was really good. Yeah,
very nostalgic.
Yeah, very nostalgic and Christmassy. That was nice.
Yeah, it's a good time for games, isn't it? Christmas, because you know. There's not much else to do.
Great.
Why are we so down on Christmas?
I'm not down. I love it. I've been eating loads of stuff. It's been awesome.
It has been awesome.
But enough of this fun. On to the next platform.
Yes.
But first of all, this.
Oh, look, it's a platform. Yeah, we've been on this platform before, but it's all kind of different and shiny and wrapped differently. It's kind of red and neatly packaged this time. Mr. Mark Green...
It's a present unwrapping
time
again.
He's going to dish out some presents.
We're going to dish out some presents,
unwrap.
So these are not as good as Alan's presents. I'm going to make that super
clear. Let's make that abundantly clear.
They're very beautifully wrapped.
I wrapped them quite nicely, I think.
Is it a copy of Edge magazine?
Yes. I'm giving you the gift of my amazing writing. So Alan, this is for you.
Thank you, Mark.
So this is, cheeky. I think, a good present for a mobile...
Is it an iPad?
Somebody plays mobile games.
Is it an iPad?
Oh, dear.
Awkward.
No. And I cannot believe this exists, which is why I'm giving it as a present. I think this is amazing.
Okay, here we go.
I think this is... I wish this was... Someone's giving this to me as a present.
What? Fun fast action. Okay, right. It's a book of Flappy Bird.
It's a Flappy Bird annual.
The Flappy Bird Bumper Annual 2015. Yeah. This implies this is going to be. There's going to be another one of these.
And they have done, I've got to say...
It's only got one...
I know, it's got two sprites in the game. And they have actually done an amazing job of filling, I reckon, about 100 pages.
Yeah.
Using just those two sprites to do all kinds of different things.
Over 75 stickers.
Flappy Bird.
Oh, yeah. It opens up. You open it up and there are the pipes.
Just the pipes in the background.
What's going to be on the rest of the thing?
There's the pipes again, and the
birds. Oh, so this is the contents. Okay,
look at how much stuff is in here.
Where is all this? Birdie jokes and Flappy... Should we go to Birdie jokes on page 42?
Yeah, we can have a birdie joke.
Let's hear some of their Flappy Bird jokes.
That page has got Flappy Birds on it. Oh, and that one.
Oh, and this one. Yeah, in different colours. Birdie jokes.
Give us one.
What does a mixed-up hen lay?
Scrambled eggs.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
You're winning. See, this is Christmas cracker gags, essentially. Oh, dear. What bird is helpful at dinner?
I don't know.
What do you do? You're eating.
Turkey?
What do you do when you eat?
Gobble?
No. You swallow.
Yeah. Oh, right. Are you going to turn around quite there? That's a good annual,
isn't
it? It'd
be good if all the punchlines were just Flappy Bird. So what bird helps you at dinner?
Flappy Bird. But it's frustrating.
Create a t-shirt. It's a t-shirt with Flappy Bird on it.
Yeah.
This is tongue-in-cheek, right?
No, it's deadly serious.
Fabric pencil.
It's genuinely not that bad.
Oh, so it's got... I mean, I've never seen more occurrences of... Actually, it's a bit like the game in that, you know...
You get to make a medal, and the medal is Flappy Bird.
Medal. But it's like hundreds of occurrences of that particular
image. Where in the world
is... this is brilliant. Where in the world is Flappy Bird? Because you get a little Flappy Bird, and he's next to the Statue of Liberty, and he's next to Big Ben, and now he's in the Alps.
It's good, isn't it?
To Leaning Tower of Pisa. This is... They must have spent literally 30 seconds putting
Merry
that
Christmas.
Together.
So
that's awesome.
Matthew, this is a joke present.
Yeah.
Enjoy. It's smaller than Alan's. But I picked it especially for you.
Okay, here we go.
I really wish I hadn't done this now. Merry Christmas. Don't be angry. Especially for you.
It's a split second.
A game I am still bitter about not giving in the space art. And I am determined to make Matthew like it.
I'm not angry. That's great. That's a game. I can play that.
Yeah. Do play it because it's actually better than you remember or think or whatever. But yeah, I would definitely like you to play it. So it is a serious gift. But it's also obviously a kind of slap in the face for kicking it out of the space arc.
Thanks very much.
I fished it out of the lava.
Oh, no, but the thing is, you know that's going to go into the lava in 985 years.
Maybe that's why I've given it to you, so you can just savour.
It's interesting looking at something you know is just going to expire, and that's going to be the end of it.
Yeah. So
can't wait to play that. Get in while you can.
Not quite the level, as I say, not quite Alan level.
Oh, they're both better than what I've got you guys.
Really? Oh, wow, I can't wait to see what...
We've set the bar disturbingly low. This is brilliant.
Merry Christmas, guys. And Alan, you need to get us off this. You need to put that amazing annual down and get us off this platform.
Okay, so let's jump.
Flap?
No. Well, this is what I'm going. Let's launch ourselves off the next platform.
No,
where
off
we
this platform.
Fall onto. We're going to fall downwards and not smack into the pipe.
Yeah.
But first of all, this. We find ourselves now on a platform which is all about things. It's sort of facing backwards. It's a platform that's facing backwards because it's about things that have happened in the past. In this way, it's...
I'm very interested to see where you're going with this.
Because it's about stuff that we have been reading / in listening to / enjoying.
It's a review, games related that a review are not platform, games themselves. Yeah. But this time, it's about things I mean Mark, things Mark has been writing.
Yes, and that you can read.
And that you, the listener, can read.
It's got
a
vain platform, you
yeah, read, it's just really. Me talking about myself for probably about 5-10 minutes.
So, with the relentless self-promotion, Mark Green, go.
How long have I got? Yes, you're not timing me, are you? So, what I wanted to talk about, because, I'm quite proud of it in a way. If you've been listening carefully to the podcast, you'll have noticed that, like, 2 or 3 times I've mentioned video game related books I've been reading. And part of the reason for that is that I've done a big roundup of books for Edge magazine, which is out now, came out just before Christmas. And I spent like, I think it was 3 or 4 months in the end, just reading every video game book I could get my hands on.
Is everything about... Well, any
video game book, but I did around
like tips books from the early
I didn't do strategy guides.
Did you do miniature gaming masterclass?
I didn't do fan fiction off of the internet. I didn't do novelizations of games, and I did a review roundup for Edge about 10 years ago now. So I didn't include any of those books, except in a little sort of roundup at the start. So it's books that have been released since. And so the main reason I want to talk about it is just because, as I say in the feature, video game books have really proliferated over the last 10 years,
yep.
And now the genres of video game books have exploded. So there's some really, really good stuff out there now.
So it's sort of critical theory type stuff.
No, I did a range. So I did some critical game design theory stuff. I did video game. Novels that are sort of take video games as their main sort of theme.
Histories,
coffee table books, art books, stuff like that. So yeah, so the main reason I want to talk about it is not to big myself up, but it's like there are some really good books, and you should get out there and read them. So it's like an order.
Check it out.
Yeah, check it out.
Check it.
But two in particular I want to recommend, which were not necessarily my complete favourites, but two that really stood out. There's a novel called Constellation Games. Have you heard of this?
No.
Constellation Games. Yeah, it's a really strange book, but it's really good. It's a fiction, and it's about aliens coming to Earth. And so it's kind of like first contact science fiction, and it's a good first contact science fiction book in its own right. But what's really interesting is that the aliens bring the entire history of alien civilizations video games with them. So they make contact with this guy, and they beam down this this console called the Games Embryo, I think it's called. And it's controlled, like the controller's like an abacus or something. And they give him this huge database of like, I think it's like 10 million years of video games. And he gets to, and then, so he does all these little capsule reviews of these. And the imagination that this guy uses to describe, to invent and describe alien video games. They're all kind of quite primitive. So sort of Atari VCS type games
And they got that far in 10 million years.
Well, no.
This is from the dweebs.
Where were you recording this podcast in 1991 or something?
I'm surprised they didn't call the book Dweebs from Space.
the names of the games and the description of them, it really makes you want to like get hold of this like made up console and play these games. And it's really funny as well. A lot of as I said in Edge, there's a bit where the aliens play an iOS sort of pony virtual pet game, and he's trying to like describe it to the rest of his species, and it's brilliant the way
the aliens are playing our games as well.
The guy's making friends with aliens, there's not a lot of that, but he does, because the main guy in the book is a developer and he's been making these sort of virtual pet games for mobile. The aliens kind of describe it. It's really funny, it's really good, it's just really imaginative. It's not filled with these capsule game reviews, but when those that are there are really, really good. So, and I don't think it's a very well known book. I definitely recommend it. And the second one that I want to mention, which I guess a lot of people have read, but if you haven't, it's definitely worth checking out, is Jordan Mechner's Making of Prince of Persia, his journals that he kept. I think you were saying they were online, right, Matthew?
They used to, I don't know if they still are, if you can now buy them as a book.
Yeah.
But they were like a while back.
Yeah. So it's just a collection of his journals from the, I don't know, 3 or 4 years he spent putting the original Prince of Persia together. So it's just really interesting because he wants to be a screenwriter at this time in his life. So he keeps talking about, he's getting distracted by this potential screenwriting, Hollywood screenwriting career. And he keeps, and he's made, Karateka. Sorry.
Oh yeah.
He's made that before. And, you can see these glimmers of him making Prince of Persia, starting to make Prince of Persia and thinking this is going to be awesome. And then, later on, he's like, I can't do this. This is going to be rubbish. The publishers keep letting him down in terms of promotion and stuff. It doesn't start out selling very well. You can see all this self-doubt of someone making a video game. It's a really good just look into someone's mind who spends 4 years making something and just, you know, at points isn't quite sure if it's going to be any good. Mm. And he's, I think, a very good writer. He's very eloquent. And so you get a real insight into his state of mind over that time.
Has he got the pictures of him, of his brother?
Yes, in the pyjamas.
Doing the rote that they then rotoscoped.
Yeah, I think that's right at the start, yeah. He's got the little frames of that he used.
He's got his brother like in a car park somewhere doing the moves that are going to be Prince of Persia.
Yeah. Just kind of traced over them essentially, make the animation. So, and Prince of Persia is an all-time classic, you know. It's rock hard, but it's a really great time capsule of how that game came to be.
Of course, the funny thing is that he eventually did have some involvement in writing the Prince of Persia movie, and it was a complete load of arse. It turns out he did pick the right career.
Yes, that's true. But yeah, lots of other really good books. So if you want to do some video game related reading, I recommend Mark Green's book review roundup in Edge magazine.
It's a really good fix. I read it. I really, really enjoyed it. Just saying that. It sort of made me laugh because I know you'd been reading all these huge books, and some of them you've had to boil down to like 50 words.
Yeah.
And it's like, that's a whole book.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, it took a long time actually to scrunch down my thoughts on, especially some of the game studies books, you know, which are long and complicated and deep, and to try and describe some of those in 50 words was really hard work.
Were some of the books awful?
No, we only picked, so I read more books than in the feature, so no offence to some of the guys who were left out, but some of the books didn't make it in terms
of
quality.
Your books are awful. If you're not in the feature, book's basically worthless. That's what Green is saying.
The list was a lot longer, and I had to leave out a lot of really good books, and I've had to write emails apologising to all these people, like, thanks for sending me your book, but it didn't make it in. I may review some of the ones that I didn't get to review on my personal blog, maybe. Mm. But yeah, it's a shame that it was, I had to cut it down quite a lot. It's like 10 pages, isn't it, in Edge?
It's got your name on it as well. They byline now.
Yeah, you get your name on things in Edge now. So,
not the reviews. Sacred.
They're still written by
ghosts.
Ghost writers. anyone got any favourite video game books before we leave this subject?
Everyone's read it, probably because you gave it away free with Arcade, but Game Over.
Yeah, I was going to go
classic.
Game Over. It's so good.
Read.
The chapter on Tetris is just extraordinary, isn't it?
And I think I said in the feature, like, any book about Nintendo is probably just 80% cribbed from Game Over, even now. Yeah.
Every feature I've ever written about anything Nintendo history in Endgamer was totally ripped off. David Sheff?
Yeah.
He's like behind probably like 95% of the anecdotes anyone has about Nintendo.
Absolutely.
It's just we're all recycling his one book.
Absolutely.
Amazing acts. Because in your feature, didn't you have the, not Nintendo Magic, Nintendo Dream?
No, Nintendo Magic, the Japanese.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So
I've
that's,
not read that one, but
yeah, that's worth reading. Because it's quite up to date. And yeah, it does feel like a kind of, in some ways, it's not written in the same style as Game Over, but it is a kind of successor because it does have that access. You know,
yeah.
David Sheff got this unbelievable access to all these people for his book. And yeah, the guy who wrote Nintendo Magic is similarly, he worked for Nikkei Business in Japan, I think. He's been able to talk to Miyamoto and Iwata.
So cool.
Yeah, and there's some good insight into that stuff you don't hear about how all the different Nintendo development teams interact and their sort of what they're guided by. You know, they're sort of.
Well, It's one of the reasons I'm a big fan. I know Nintendo do them, so there's like going to be an element of like weird editing going on with them, but it's why I've always really liked the Iwata Asks interviews.
Yeah.
Because they're kind of like just the best access you'll ever have.
Yeah.
And actually they seem quite kind of frank about stuff, and they sort of go, oh, this wasn't working, or this is how this worked. And it's all shot through, it's very positive.
Yeah, yeah.
Designed to promote the games. But they should release a book of those, because those are absolutely like
they really
classic.
Should, that's a good point, actually. Should we, is that it?
Yeah, happy? I think we should get off this self-promotion platform.
Yeah, it's getting a bit awkward.
No, we're forgetting something. This.
Well, that wrestling you hear is because no, it's good because we are on the Christmas presents platform again, and now it's Matthew's turn to be Santa and dish out. Oh, some very nicely wrapped presents.
Look at that.
But gold wrapping paper, stars, like very Nintendo-y.
Yeah.
He's pressing it seductively.
Yeah. Is it firm or sort of slightly...
Well, you know what's in it. Yeah, okay. So thanks. This is Matthew sending Alan his present.
Oh, it is. It's pleasingly firm, but a little bit flexible.
Yeah.
A little bit. I'm not going to flex it too much. Oh, this is really nicely wrapped. This is much better than my wrapping.
I got a horrible feeling about this.
What?
Well, no, okay. I'll tell you what I think might be going on after we open it. It's just magazine shaped. And I'm thinking, there might be a reason why Matthew's not showing me the shape of my present yet. I just have a horrible feeling it's going to be...
You're going to get some award-winning journalism right here.
I don't...
If you've done this, never expect to be able to live it down. And... Hey! Goodness me, listeners!
So
what
now,
have I
Matthew,
got here?
When you lift out my present, I have a feeling it's going to be the same. Oh, right, yes.
You are a dreadful human being.
You might find out what it is. Just wrap it.
No spoilers. No spoilers, right?
Yeah. So it's very nicely wrapped. It's the same, exactly the same size as the official Xbox magazine.
It feels laden with high quality features and reviews. I mean, no spoilers there.
I actually can't remember what yours is. I know Alan's was that, but yours is something slightly different, I think.
Right, so we did say you got yours was official.
Yeah,
Xbox,
this is official Xbox magazine.
The latest issue.
Oh.
On sale now.
Yeah, we're right. Issue 105.
Oh, no, it was also Evolve OXM.
It's the same issue, official Xbox magazine.
Now, if you'd got, like, February, that would have been something.
Great.
But it's got a good preview of Evolve.
Yeah.
Right.
It's got 50 games you want to play on Xbox One.
Yes.
It's got a good competition to win an Xbox One console and 10 great games.
Wow.
Oh, yeah. Right. So,
yeah. I thought you wouldn't be happy with that.
Oh, he's been kidding us. I thought he was going to get out another magazine-shaped package.
I was going to do a triple stage thing. Because I was going to give you those, and then I was going to wrap up my GMAs. wrap those. But
that would be very generous of you to give us awards.
So, Alan, I warn you, these aren't much better than
the official Xbox.
I fail to see what could be.
50 reasons Xbox One will rule 2015.
Yeah.
Says official Xbox magazine.
Well, you know. So, Alan, happy Christmas.
Thank you very much. Oh, here you go. Oh, I've got a little card inside.
Oh,
yeah,
a little card and everything.
Yay.
So quite small.
Yeah.
All right.
No, I'm just trying to describe it for the listeners.
It's the thought that counts.
So, okay, what have I got? It's sort of 6-inch square box, but it's got it's a thing that's like blister packed. Is that the word?
I can feel it.
Oh, hello.
Hey.
Oh, wow. I was trying to find some Minecrafty stuff and I didn't manage. It's an Enderman. With a block and a little mushroom, red mushroom.
What, who is that
block.
Guy?
Enderman. This is the...
You've got no idea who that is.
I can't believe the blank looks I'm getting. This
Enderman.
Is Minecraft. So I've got a little kind of 3-4-inch tall Enderman.
My little brother was like, you should get him Steve, because everyone likes Steve. And I thought, oh, that guy just caught my eye more in the shot.
Enderman are quite terrifying, really.
Yeah, that's why I liked it. I thought it was kind of... There's something about his little eyes.
They sort of have this disconcerting... they sort of appear suddenly right next to you.
There you go.
I've got a little mushroom and a little Minecraft on there.
Good present.
Excellent.
Yeah, yours isn't quite as good as that.
I'll take whatever I can get. Anything's got to be better than official Xbox magazine. so this is slightly bigger than...
Nice.
again, it feels blister. Did you call it blister packed?
Well, yeah, that, you know, when you get the card backing and the.
Why are you laughing? I don't like. Is it second sight? Not second sight.
No.
What do you call split second? Second sight.
No.
The look on Matthew's face. What have you got? There he is.
It's Captain. It's a figurine. It's Captain Jacob Keys.
Yeah, Captain Keys from Halo.
It's just some dude. It's an just action figure.
Well, nothing says Halo like Captain Jacob
Keys. Yeah,
from
I could
Halo.
So the options I could have had are Master Chief.
Yeah, Spartan, you may have heard of
Guilty Spark and Sentinel. Mickey, I don't know who Mickey is, to be honest. Or Captain Jacob Keys.
Signia, they only got like a...
little gun.
Oh, well, that's the pistol that he gives to Master Chief right at the start of the game.
Are you making this up?
Nah.
That's a classic character.
Original pistol.
He's got a heck of a look on his face. He looks disturbed. Is that,
I thought he was your favourite character in all the games. That's why I got that for you.
Captain Jacob
Keys from Halo.
I never stopped talking about him. Yeah, 22 moving parts. Amazing.
Well, there's a choice of like that or a Pac-Man thing, and I was like,
You don't want to get Mark Pac-Man's.
No, because he likes keys.
What?
You're always like, keys.
Keys, yeah, Keys is he's an absolute hero. I love the bit in Halo where he gave Master Chief that gun. That's my
You could relive that moment, except without Master Chief, because you don't have Master Chief, you just have Keys. So you can just have him reaching out a gun.
Yeah, thanks, man. Matthew.
Hey, if you're going to do good Halo tat, you could do some sort of key ring that was keys related.
Keys,
Commander
ring.
Keys.
It's very detailed. Actually, it's very good quality.
Yeah. It's no expense spared.
It really does look like
this
him.
This Slenderman is very nicely done. He's quite, you know, he looks like
Enderman.
Yeah, is he looks like. He's articulated in such a way that he looks just like the thing.
Enderman sounds concerning. Like, are we going to the Endermans for dinner?
Yeah, Jason Enderman.
I hate like those that. Endermans. Or Friendermans.
Yeah,
nice.
So there you go.
Great gifts, Matthew.
Happy Christmas.
Oh, thanks.
Happy Christmas.
Happy Christmas, everyone. So that's the end of all our gift giving now. I think we've got quite a nice haul there.
Yeah.
Merry Christmas, and see you on the other side of this platform. Or not on this, but off on the next platform after this. Welcome, listeners, to Christmas in the year 3000.
Yeah.
We are sitting inside a space ark, which has been constructed by the people of Earth to rescue everyone. Well, not everyone, some people.
The select few.
From.
Everyone thought that was a Christmas miracle. Really?
No, not everyone.
It might have been everyone, but we've decided to be a little bit more selective.
Yeah, we've been more selective because the Earth is collapsing in on itself in a catastrophic occurrence that we're referring to as the event, and not only is the space ark taking people away from this awful nightmare, but is also taking video games, and we are the committee charged with choosing those video
games. And so this week we are doing party games.
That's right. But before we talk about those party games, I thought the listeners might want to know what is in the Christmas charts in the year 3000.
Okay.
So I've been thinking of... I've been looking at the charts.
We've still got things as frivolous as music in this apocalypse scenario.
Absolutely. It's the only thing... It's all we've got left. Christmas is all that's left, really.
Live Aid have done a new version of whatever, you know, that thing.
Yeah, don't step on my toes, all right?
Right.
That's better than what I've come up with. So here are some of the Christmas hits from the year 3000. You've got Baby, It's 2,192 Degrees Fahrenheit Outside. A classic hit. Eyeballs Roasting on an Open Fire. Because of the lava.
These eight brackets. After the sun title. Because of the lava, just in case you'd forgotten.
Andy Williams has done a version of his famous Christmas song. It's the most excruciatingly painful time of the year.
That's the hologram of Andy Williams.
Yeah. Let it snow. Oh, please, God, let it snow. there's Walking in the Air, because we've all evaporated into steam. And Santa Claus Is Coming to Town. Oh no, wait, that's a fat man whose skin has been flayed off by the lava, so he's red, and the white bits are his bones.
The white bits are his bones. That's so sinister.
Merry Christmas.
So that's what life is like musically in the year 3000. Christmas in the year 3000.
That's brilliant.
Yeah, but let's get back to the real business of the frivolity. yeah, as Alan mentioned earlier, we are choosing party games this week.
We are.
What with it being Christmas and all.
Well, we're in the mood to celebrate on board the yacht.
We are, absolutely. And so who wants to kick us off with a party game? Maybe I'll start, actually, because I've got a bit of a obvious choice. But that I would like to go and see going into the arc.
Well, I refuse.
Yeah, sure. That's obvious. It. It is, and I think it counts as a party game. I'd like to put Wii Sports into the arc.
Yeah.
So I know it's not an original thought, but I think that Wii Sports is absolutely one of the most genius moves in all of video game history. Like, the you know, Nintendo invent a new, you know, what amounts to a new kind of control, and you know, the history of controllers is not really a history of innovation in a big way. And so it was a big gamble for Nintendo to do the whole Wii Remote thing. And in Wii Sports, they just came up with, I don't think there could have been a more perfect game for people just to take to the Wii and the Wii Remote. And that's why the Wii was a success, was just giving people a bit of white plastic and saying, if you swing it like a tennis racket, then you can play tennis.
Hmm.
You know? And as people who play, you know, we're kind of seasoned gamers.
Hmm.
You know, I have to admit, we can be a bit cynical about party games and their simplicity and their, you know, but Wii Sports is bags and bags of fun, no matter what games you play, how much of a gamer you are. And of course, you know, we all know you can just play Wii Tennis and Wii Bowling by just slightly flicking the Wii Remote, you know, and leaning back on your sofa. Well, but it is just a set of games that encourages you to get into it and to have fun, no matter who you are. Yeah, just perfect. You know, I can't imagine a better...
Well, you say that, but some of the games are better than others, aren't they?
Well, I'm thinking mainly of tennis and...
And the bowling is, like, famously fantastic.
I'd say baseball was probably my favourite.
Really?
Why are you looking at me like that? Don't you remember me in the office, like, doing the old home run competition?
Yeah, I remember, but it's, I don't know, I'd say tennis and bowling before baseball, for sure.
That's your go-to bits.
I just thought, like, standing, you know, the motion of, like, really taking a baseball hit seriously and kind of, like, really, like...
There's that, but the tennis, I just think the thwack, the noise of the remote is just...
Yeah.
Tennis, it's so easy.
Yeah, number one. Tennis is number one. But I put bowling number three after baseball.
Right. I put boxing way down.
Boxing right at the bottom.
Wait, you're fun to do for a couple of times, but it doesn't stand up, does it? The boxing. Once you've done it a couple of times,
it just didn't quite.
It's a little spotty, but very, very accessible, as you say.
Yeah. And you know what else is really good? Music's really good in Wii Sports.
Oh, it is.
Guy who did the music for Wave Race. Can't remember the guy's name. But I really like them. I've got the...
It's really big sounding.
Yeah. It's the confidence, I think, of Wii Sports that helps make it. It's, think it's perfect little package. So, obviously, you know, there's not a lot to say about Wii Sports as such, except, you know, what a perfect game for the arc. Imagine us playing Wii Tennis and...
You can't conceive of a space arc that hasn't got Wii Sports on it.
Mm.
It just doesn't compute. It doesn't make any kind of sense. No. So, on that basis, it's got to go, isn't it?
You're putting it in.
Yeah. For sure.
This space arc is easy.
Yeah, it's like, I think the golden rule with party games is that you can sort of explain it instantly. You know, you don't have to explain. You know, you don't have to learn how to play it. You can just play it. And that's the golden thing with Wii Sports.
Yeah.
It's probably the most playable thing ever.
Yeah.
Love
Agreed.
It.
Oh, well, that was
straight on.
So a little easy entry into the...
Welcome.
Space Arc canon. Welcome. Did you say just say welcome?
Welcome.
That's the voice of the Arc. It's an interesting new element for 2015.
All right.
Space Arc welcomes Wii Sports.
It does. It does.
Less so the room.
Yeah, the room we've already tucked away in a corner somewhere. Out of sight,
it's
out of mind.
And it's watching you.
The room.
Go on then, Alan. What have you got for the space arc?
All right, I'm going to bring something that you guys, as Endgamer writers, are going to respond to instantly. It's Rayman Raving Rapids.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. You can feel the love, the Rayman love and enthusiasm for a fantastic Wii game.
Mm.
Right, the reason why I wanted to put it in is because it's not Mario Party, but I think it's up there. I think it's you know, it's really up there. The quality of the mini games is way higher than you're looking at me like.
It's good. It is good.
Well,
right,
I'm no fan. The bad news for you is I'm no fan of Mario Party. You know.
Wait. Okay. Well, in which case, you should definitely put Rayman Raving Rabbits in.
Right.
Because it's better.
It's better than Mario Party. Yeah. So any game better than Mario Party goes
well, that's every game ever.
It's got it's got a lot of variety, but it makes good use of the Wii's capabilities. It's got music stuff going on. I particularly remember playing a music like maraca type shaking game, which was a lot of fun. And obviously it's got like a little go-kart thing. Yeah, I had a good time playing that game.
Where were you playing this? Who were you playing
it
with?
I was playing it with my family.
Oh, okay.
I played it with my brother.
Okay.
And my sister as well.
So it was in a party environment.
Yeah.
So we got this advantage.
With grown-ups for playing it.
Yeah, grown-ups. Yeah. Adults playing Rayman Raving Rabbids. It's fun. And it's funny. Like, those cutscenes are good.
Were they smiling? Were they smiling through gritted teeth, or were their teeth open?
Alan's brought this thing. We don't want to make him feel bad.
Right, okay. 75 games. They're not all hits, but
no.
That's what's written on the box.
Yeah. The box quote. There's enough hits in there to make it worth it.
All right, let's go the other way. How many of them are hits?
Well, I've named two.
Two out of 75.
Maracas.
Yeah, there's a sort of scooting around on the water, like a go-karty thing, but right. On water. It's good.
Right. Good.
I know. There's a really nice one where you're trying to bounce each other off a platform.
Well, that's ripped straight out of Mario Party.
Shh. No, it isn't.
We can't let this in. We can't let this in.
Don't you find the rabbits the most hateful thing?
I don't like Rayman, so I'm more with the rabbids.
Now, that's really interesting, because one of the reasons I hate rabbids is that they've kind of taken over the Rayman universe. There was a period before the 2D Rayman games, Origins, Origins and...
Legends.
So this came before those.
Yeah.
And I was just really frustrated that, a quality platforming series had suddenly been overtaken by these weird characters and this weird party game. Because I think Raving Rabbids was going to be a platformer, and then it got all switched up and turned into this party game.
Yeah, because in the first issue of Endgamer, there was an interview with them about Raving Rabbids, and the game they described, they're like, so Rayman's in this prison, he has to work with these rabbids to escape from this prison, there's going to be, he can be clambering around, and you're like, no, it's a minigame compilation, what are you talking about? You think you're making that, bizarre.
Yeah, yeah.
Truly barmy.
Yeah, we can't do it. people would hate us for putting
I'll confess, I wasn't. Really
I was thinking
very
all
optimistic.
The culture, like we want to save future generations, just the rabbits.
Yeah,
but no. I just don't. I think we should just ban even mentioning that they were ever a thing.
But there are some good times in that game.
The French space art is all
rabbits. Yeah. It's captained by some rabbits. That's why it's just going to plummet straight into the lava, and you'll be like, those silly rabbits.
Rabbits.
They call them the cretinous rabbits.
Yeah,
les
lapins crétins, according to Wikipedia.
Yeah, it's all very French, isn't it? I think we're going to throw that into the lava.
Yeah, definitely.
And people will even though people are sinking into lava as Rayman Raving Rabbids flies towards them, they'll all try and move out of the way. They don't want to be anywhere near it.
They'll swim to melt somewhere else because they don't want their remains mixing with Rayman Raving Rabbids.
Yeah. Oh, sorry about that.
Bringing endorsements.
Yeah.
Wah! That's the nice other rabbit melting.
Rabbit, good.
Or indeed doing anything. Wah!
Screaming obnoxiously into your ears.
Yeah, that's brought back some bad memories. those rabbits. All right, so, Matthew, give us this party game.
I'm going to put forward WarioWare Inc. Mega Party Games, which is the...
The Wii one.
It's the GameCube one.
GameCube one, sorry.
So it's the GameCube sort of version, adaptation of the GBA original. It's the second WarioWare game, but what it did really well, so it was all the games that you'd already played on GBA,
Okay.
But what it did really well is he packaged them into four player games where they would act as some kind of like test or kind of currency. So even though you were still doing the games, they're fundamentally the same little mini games, they were dressed up in quite fun ways. And there was one particular mode called Wobbly Bobbly, where you basically you're on stacks of turtles. And every time you kind of compete to win extra turtles for your stack by playing the core mini games, and they'd get like faster and faster. But then in between, like it would add up you, and you'd each get an extra turtle, and then there'd be a kind of a segment in between rounds where the turtle stack would begin to sway, and you had to kind of balance yourself. So the more turtles you had, like the more dangerous it became. And but then if other people fell over, they became one of the turtles, and they'd like walk along the floor and could like nudge the towers to like mess you up. And it just had this sense of humour. Like it was a game that really understood that even when you were out, you still had a chance to like play. Like it was all geared around everyone was doing something all the time. But it had a brilliant sense of humour in terms of it would decide like whose turn it was. It would like the order of turns with like its own weird extra games they made. So that there's this one where I still to this day don't really know what the story behind the guys are, but you've basically got a big mat. Yeah. You've got like four guys lying in the corners of the mat, and they can't like move except for like their hands, and you sort of have to flop them towards the middle of the map.
Yeah,
they sort of this. Yeah, whatever's going on I don't know. But like, I just remember hooting with laughter playing this thing. We played it at university loads, and we'd. It was one of the few games where, a bit like you were saying with Game Beasts, where we started playing it and with complete strangers, you know, people who hadn't, they were strangers to the game, like they'd never played it before.
Right.
We ended up playing it for like 6-7 hours, just endlessly, because it was a game that everyone instantly picked up, instantly got, and it's like not so complicated that you have to master it, but there's enough variety there that you can keep playing it, and like that is, I think, a kind of key to a good party game. Plus everyone can play WarioWare, because you only need like a button for each game or a D-pad.
Okay. That's a weird one for me then. I'm sort of a bit torn,
isn't it? Because,
we're just recycling going on. I knew I should have pitched this before we kicked the rabbits in the face.
They've tainted everything.
But there's a sort of recycling element there, which is a bit like,
I've never found the growing up WarioWares anywhere near as good as the GBA ones. That's certainly something. I really like the Wii one, but there's definitely something missing. So I'm very much in 2 minds about this one.
I kind of think it should go on the basis that it is a party game and it is pretty good, and we will have a good time playing it.
Right.
I think on that basis, really, I don't think we can afford to be too.
Like
moodily about it, saying, "Oh, it's not the right version."
Of course we can. That's our job. We pick the sliver of a reason not to put something in,
and then it doesn't go in. That's humanity loses forever.
That they've already lost. I'm going to say no to worry.
Don't worry, it's on.
You're not invited to play WarioWare's Mega Fight games. Yeah. Well, I like the Japanese version of it, because you know they're called Made in Wario. And then they always have like a word sort of fixed to that. In the multiplayer one, it's just Gather on GameCube. Gather, Made in Wario. I like the idea of like, come everyone, it's Made in Wario.
That is nice.
That's good.
So we've got a suggestion for Space Ark from Ross Phillips on the email here. He says, afternoon, folks.
Okay.
This is him talking. I've been following the podcast since the second show, not me. I've been following it since the first month. And he's been reading the magazine since N64 magazine in the old days.
Good man.
Yet I've never emailed in before. And so here's his email. Okay. If there's still an opportunity for me to do so, I'd like to put forward Bishy Bashy Special PS1 for the Party Games Week on Space Ark. I think it's a hard game to say. Bishy Bashy Special should be preserved, as the sheer lunacy of it all should, nay, must, be admired for generations to come. Even in 2014, they don't make them like this anymore. Our future society absolutely cannot afford to melt a game that features party classics such as Uncle Launcher, Hyper Pie Throw, and Jump for the Meat. I think he's made that one up. For reasons I shouldn't have to explain to educated gentlemen such as yourselves. But even so, Bishi Bashi Special is fantastic in its own right. On the PlayStation, there wasn't anything as addictive, hilarious, or compelling in a party setting. In a bleak future, the Space Ark needs something to make everyone smile and enjoy themselves. This is that party game. Thanks very much. Forgotten. Have a great Christmas. Kindest regards, Ross Phillips.
I've forgotten Bishi Bashi.
Yeah, I had.
Really forgotten it.
So, yes, Bishi Bashi Special is brilliant. So, it's got three big buttons, right? It's an arcade game originally. Red button, green button, red button, blue button, green button. Mm-hmm. And every game is just about pressing the right buttons at the right time. So I remember like building in my mind, and he's mentioned some of the games there, you something about building a giant sandwich, you know.
Right. So you've got to put the thing in at
the
right time. Yeah.
So no, I'm well up for putting Ross Phillips' choice in. What do you guys think? You play it?
I did very briefly a very, very, very long time ago, and I do remember it being deeply stupid. So I think it appeals really on that basis.
Yeah, we need some stupidity in the arc, he says.
Yeah, I'm in the mood for
as we come to our 11th week of making really stupid decisions.
If personal whim counts for anything, then yes.
Yeah. Matthew?
Yeah, I must admit, I've not played it, but it sounds great, and I definitely want to find out what the story is behind this uncle launching.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So, Ross, your game goes in, and that means, does Ross Phillips also come with us onto the Space Ark?
Does he work like that?
No, he goes into the lava.
He goes into the lava with the rabbits.
Out you go.
Into the lava.
Oh, bye, Ross. But thank you for your amazing suggestion, and we will enjoy playing, thinking
we'll
of
think
you.
Of you as we wave you off into the, well, I say sunset, but I mean, it's really more, sunset is where the sun sort of melts into the land, but really it's kind of the opposite, isn't it?
Sunset is where you can distinguish between the sky and the land by a different colour, but those days are gone. Yeah. It's just a curtain of
it's
red.
It's more like the earth is the surface of the sun.
Essentially. You know. On that festive note, we should jet out of the... no, we don't have to jet out of the space.
Whoa,
land in the lava. That'd be awful. No, don't press that jet out button. It'd be in real trouble.
I'd like to think there is one.
So I think we should tackle a really big, meaty genre for our first Space Ark of 2015.
Okay.
So first-person shooters is a very, very big genre. So let's take a chunk of that. Yeah. Let's remove for now the military... 21st century shooters.
Yeah, because you've got your sort of COD and
And all that. COD. And
Battlefield.
COD.
Okay, yeah.
COD. Battlefield.
Medal of Honor.
And COD. So let's take those out and let's have non-military first-person shooters.
Non-COD. Yeah, okay, so this is first-person shooters which are not military set. Not modern-day military set. Okay, got it.
Interesting.
So, listeners... tell us your favourite non-modern day military first-person shooter, and we will talk about your favourite games on our podcast
throw
next
them
time.
Throw into the lava.
Yeah, we'll basically throw them all in the lava, but we will talk about them beforehand. The details on how to do that are coming up in the next bit of the podcast in a minute, which comes to you after this.
So we find ourselves at the end of another fine podcast.
A special Christmas New Year podcast.
Yeah, so another fine year.
Another fine year you've got us into.
It's the other, so this is the tail end of 2014.
Yeah, so I guess, I think definitely we should thank all our listeners for listening to our podcast 2014. And please stick with us for 2015, where we'll have more awesome podcasts for you.
Exciting things going to happen next year.
Are they?
Don't know what they are yet, but you know, it's going
to happen. Don't promise that.
That prediction is guaranteed to come true. Yeah. That's the loosest prediction
I've ever heard. There's going to be some things. If you've got any ideas for what they should be, then please get in touch with us. On email, you can email us at trp@therotatingplatform.com. If you're a Facebook user, then you can pop over to facebook.com/rotatingplatform.
Mm-hmm.
Or if you're on the old tweets, then what you can do is point your Twitter at Rotating Podcast.
Mm.
What could you do? You could sort of stand outside our kitchens, possibly.
Don't tell
masquerading as birds.
What? Yeah, you could do that.
In hope that we'll come out and throw a few scraps. You know, we could do that.
Certainly. Certainly.
I'm not really one for scraps.
No? Well...
You consume all.
You're a lover, not a scrapper.
Yeah.
So I guess the message is stick to Twitter, Facebook,
probably. Yeah, email, it's probably for the best. I won't make any promises for the other ways.
And yeah, so we should wish our listeners a very happy new year.
We should.
Yeah, we're going to.
Okay, let's do that.
Happy New Year, listeners.
Happy New Year, listeners.
Happy New Year.
Yeah, we'll see you in the year...
In the year 3000.
The year 3000, and so also the year 2015.
So I hope you have a happy new year, listeners, and see you on the flip side. Bye!
Bye! Bye.